Showtime.
Blog Talk Radio.
It's the Late Show with Brandy Weatherman.
I want a hippopotamus for Christmas. Only a hippopotamus will do. Don't want a doll, no dinky tinker toy. I want a hippopotamus to play with and enjoy. I want a hippopotamus for Christmas. I don't think Santa Claus will mind you. Through the front door, that's the easy thing to do. I can see me now on Christmas morning, creeping down the stairs. Oh, what joy and what surprise when I open up my eyes to see a hippo hero standing there. I want a hippopotamus for Christmas. Only a hippopotamus will do. The hippo is a vegetarian. There's lots of room for him in our two-car garage. I'd feed him there and wash him there and give him his massage. I can see me now on Christmas morning, creeping down the stairs. Oh, what joy and what surprise when I open up my eyes to see a hippo hero standing there. I want a hippopotamus for Christmas. Only a hippopotamus will do. No crocodile or rhinoceroses. I only like hippopotamuses, and hippopotamuses like me too.
Welcome to another exciting episode here on Francie and Friends. Of course, we are joined by Mr. Tom Sawyer.
Hey, how's it going, everybody?
All right. You're adorable, Tom. Love you to death.
Well, thanks.
And also, we are joined by Mr. William Brower.
Good morning, good evening, and good afternoon, everybody, wherever you are in the world.
It's 5 o'clock somewhere,
oh, yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
Happy hour.
All right. This is really cool. I love this woman. Oh, I have to. We're family. I found out there's somebody really cool in my family. Our guest tonight is going to be Cindy Hart. You're going to find out how cool she is as this show goes along, because as I dug deep, I'm like, man, is there anything you have not done? So we'll she's got a great story. She's got a great book. It's called Determined, and we're going to talk all about her. We're going to bring her on in just a few minutes. Another show note, December 5th, we got Corey Davis, who's going to be here. December the 12th, we are going to have Terry Horns on, and on the 19th, we're going to have Mr. Paul Eubanks on the show, and we're trying to figure out when we can get Joey on the phone. All right, so our sponsor, Black Veggie Books, has a couple of announcements. Nick.
That must be me. Yeah.
It is.
We are in the middle of Cyber Black Fry Monday weekend over at Black Bedsheet Books at blackbedsheetbooks.com, where we've got, like, well, Yeah, I you see, people, I run this this medium to small press. It's basically I just put out like all kinds of horror books and science fiction and fantasy and everything. We've got like almost like 200 authors when you look at the anthologies and stuff as well. So we're in the middle of our biggest sale, and it ends tomorrow. And we also have new releases. We have a new line of books, Classic Horror Series, which the first of which just came out yesterday, Carmilla. It's the oldest English language vampire novel. So that it predates Dracula. It's really, really cool. You got to check it out. The next one that we're doing is Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. And that has a an introduction by Raina Young, as a matter of fact. So, and then tomorrow, fingers crossed, we're going to have Fred Wehe's Fright House. So it's going to be really cool, and look out for that. And more in the following couple of weeks also, including Chuck W. Chapman's new novel, and so on and so forth. And, oh, also, if everything works out, Raina Young's adult novel, Slasher Girl, is going to be coming out before Christmas. Also, a hardcover of The Price of Fear, our Vincent Price book that was actually co-written by Vincent Price, and also a Fred Wehe Holiday Madness is going to be hardcover. So look out for that, too. I think that's about it, though. That's a lot.
That is a lot. You definitely said a lot. Yeah. Okay, before we bring Cindy on, William, Tom, any announcements?
No, not too much.
Nothing here. It's like I've closed out the end of the year. I wanted to do something called Dark Christmas, but I got a family event the same day. So it's like, okay, there goes that one. You know?
Yeah. I didn't hit Powerball, so it's back to the grind for me.
Yeah, same here. You know,
right.
It's like I'm dragging myself across the finish line at the end of the year, you know.
We always do. Usually,
yep.
at least we hold our heads up, right, when we're doing it?
Yep.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
All right, without further ado, are we ready?
I'm ready.
I see that my mom has called in, and she's not feeling well, but she wanted to call in. But let's bring her on. Hold on. We got music. There we go. Hey, Cindy, how you doing?
Hey. Hi. Hey, cuz. How are you?
I'm doing good, cuz. See, we can actually say cuz because... That's
yeah.
Because
of the wonderful things she
does.
Yeah.
Cindy, there is somebody I want to bring on because she is calling in for you.
Oh, that's
she's
awesome.
Calling in just for you.
Oh, my Aunt Sandy.
Hold on, oh, there we go. Now I got that. Okay, there she is.
Hi, Cindy.
Is this my Aunt Sandy?
Hi. Haven't seen you since you were like 7. Little
I know.
It's all grown
it's
up.
Been
I hear
a whole
like
world away.
Yeah. Well, it's good to
you know
hear about
yes,
your life. And...
My seventh birthday was my favorite birthday of all times. My seventh birthday,
aww.
I believe you and Patty and Zesta were there, and
yeah.
It's the year I got my first bicycle.
Oh, yeah.
Ah!
Well, now.
That's huge.
And it was, it was a moment marked in my mind because I stood there and looked at it and started crying, and I went, why am I crying? Because I'm happy. So it was the first time I ever cried because I was happy.
Oh, that's huge.
Aww.
That's good.
And who would have thought how far that bicycle would have taken you? Your very first bike.
I know. Around the world.
place. Yeah.
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 You've accomplished a lot in your life. And you've been strong through your life. I hear you've had a lot of problems, and you've conquered them all.
Well, you know, I come by stubborn, honestly.
Oh, yes.
Hey, another problem back.
Yeah.
Not from your mom. Your
yep.
mom was wonderful.
Yeah, she still is.
I bet she is. You just can't, Dad. That's just natural.
Yeah. Like I said, I come by stubborn naturally from both sides. So
okay.
I'm very blessed.
Okay. Oh, good. I'm glad you feel that way.
Yeah, she's not feeling too good today. And she's like, text me the phone number. I'm calling in. I got to say hi to her.
Okay. I'm sorry you're not feeling well.
Well, I've kind of had the punies for the past couple of weeks. But I'm right now getting ready to go pick up the little girls from work, so. Well, they're not little.
Oh, it's so late. And you just moved into a new house, didn't you?
Mm-hmm. Yes, we did. We just bought a new house. And we're very happy.
Okay. Well, all right. Well, bless your heart. Thank you for reaching out to me.
Well, it was nice to hear your voice. And I love all the pictures that you sent us, and I just love you a lot. I think about you a lot.
Oh, thank
what
you.
About
I mean,
parents? I'm going to let you go now. Okay.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Love you, Aunt Sandy.
Okay.
Love you, Mom.
Love you, Francie.
Aww. Yeah, my mom's pretty cool. That's cool. I do. My mom's like, don't you remember when you were a kid? I told you of your really cool cousin. No, but Laura Skousen, Zesta's daughter. I'm hoping she's going to call in. We'll see how that might. But I know that she did want me to let you know that she named her baby doll, her childhood baby doll, after you. Yeah.
Oh boy.
Yeah, and my younger brother, I can't call him my little brother, Scotty, because he's taller than me now. But he did send me a text message today and goes, "Dang it, I'm going to be asleep at that time, but please tell her I said hi."
All right, no problem. No problem.
All right. So all the mushy stuff is out of the way now.
And now it's time
for
the nitty gritty.
No, this is really awesome. It's like last night I was talking to you, and I did a lot of research on you, you know, for tonight. And my gosh, now you were an Olympian hopeful. What year was that?
So in 1984. I was training for the Los Angeles Olympic Games in cycling, and I was actually down here in Florida, and I was racing in what's called a stage race, which is a several-day race, and so it's like, you know, a bunch of races, and then at the end, it's the person with the fastest time. It's kind of like the Tour de France, only this one was much shorter. It was only like 4 days of a stage race. And I won, you know, like second place in the stage race. And, and I was like, well, I've got to train some more. And so my father was with me, your uncle. My father was with me, and I wanted to ride 100 miles. And so we were in Ocala, Florida, and I decided I was going to ride 100 miles from Ocala to Daytona. On State Route 40. Well, a truck driver had other ideas. So my father was going to drive ahead of me and wait for me to show up. And I was riding my bike, and I came to a T intersection where I had the right of way, and a beer truck came to the stop sign, and he saw me and he saw a car behind me. He decided he was not going to wait for me. He pulled out in front of me. But he didn't pay attention to the speeding car coming in the opposite direction, who swerved to miss hitting the beer truck and hit me instead. So I
had
So yeah. I had a compound fracture right of my leg. So my lower leg was broken. And the serious part is I flew 20 feet over the car and hit my head on the pavement. And so my father was a firefighter paramedic. And so when I didn't show up, he got nervous. So he flagged down a car and he said, "Hey, have you seen anybody on a bike?" And he goes, "You mean that kid that got hit by a car?" So he went and pulled up, and they held him back, and they said, "This is a death scene. We can't let you close to him."
Oh my gosh!
And they wouldn't let him in the car. Oh. They wouldn't let him in the ambulance. He had to follow the coroner to the hospital. So, I woke up 2 weeks later from a coma, and I remember just like blinking my eyes, and I didn't have my contacts in, so everything was blurry, and I went, "Wow!" In my head, I'm thinking, "I must have really been tired last night because I don't remember going to sleep here."
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So that was a surreal experience, a very surreal experience. But I no longer fear death. I felt no pain. I have no memory of what happened. But, it just made me, I couldn't wait to get back on the bike. And so I stayed in the hospital for over a month and then came back. I was in a cast. I had several surgeries on my leg. The Olympics were totally out at that point. But
yeah.
My boyfriend at that time borrowed a tandem. And I had a cast on my leg, and I put my father's bike shoe on over my cast, and I got on the back of the bike, and I felt like I was home. So I competed. So the Olympics were in July. I got hit in March. The Olympics were in July. And then in August, I competed in the national games, the national championships. And I think I was like 27th, but I didn't care because – you know, I was back on the bike.
Mm-hmm.
That's
actually really cool because a lot of people that were like in a really bad car accident, they're like afraid to drive after that. You got back on the bike as soon as possible. You're like, "Nope, this is where I want to be. This is where I belong."
Yep.
So you put back all that fear. That is so awesome.
But they said I was severely brain damaged, but, you know, that just made – like I said, I come by stubborn naturally. He was like, "You tell me I can't do something, I'm going to do it." You know, they told me, you know, I had to go through some – oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Tom. Or is this
– I was going to say, instead of being
Tom?
A vice, like most people, that's a good – that was a good thing. It's not a vice with you, you know.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean – I'll say this much, you know, definitely, hands down, you know, it's all about determination, and that's for sure. You and I are in a similar boat in one sense. 2009, very ironically enough, on New Year's Eve, and I generally don't drink anything stronger than coffee, but, you know, I was hit by a drunk driver, and so... you know, I was, you know, kind of a similar thing laid up and everything else. And, you know, I kind of utilized the downtime. And I had one good functioning hand that was still strong enough. So I actually sat there and I wrote a whole second book at the time while I was during the course of the recovery. So yeah.
Absolutely.
You know, yeah, it's all about mental determination. So without a doubt.
Well,
definitely.
I've come to learn that there's only one thing in this life that I have control over, and that's my attitude. I really don't have control over so many things in my life, but the one true thing that I do have control over is my attitude, and my attitude is mine, and I get to decide what my attitude is. And, you know,
amen.
If I want to be happy, I'm going to be happy. I mean, I get to decide. Nobody else.
Wow, that was actually really cool. I remember I was doing an interpersonal communication class in college, and that's exactly what my professor said. You never let anybody else be in control of you. You never tell your partner, you made me angry, because, you know, you can't let that happen. I guess that, I hope I made sense of that. But I remember him,
absolutely.
Yeah, that's like the best example in the world.
Yeah.
And William was just talking about how he was determined. That's the name of your book. She wrote a book, too.
Yeah. Awesome. So, I mean, well, we didn't even fully talk about the book yet, and I already want to buy a copy, so... You know, just from hearing about your experience of the bike and being over in Ocala, and, you know, yeah, I mean, Ocala is famous for being horse country and everything else, so it's very, very rural up there, so.
That's why I rode up here for it. So so after that, we had, like, national team training camps here, actually between Ocala and Sanford. We had bike camps for years that I trained here. We would train here for like a couple of months. So we trained down here for spring training, and then so I did a stage race in Texas in 1986, and it really was like, I mean, we had 108 women in the field, and you know, we were training. I mean, we were racing for a month against each other all over Texas. So it was a tour of Texas, and
That actually sounds like fun.
You know.
I want to do it.
Now, one thing I'm definitely curious about, outside of watching the games every 4 years, like everybody else in the world, how accurate are a lot of the coaches versus what we see on the films? You know, outside of obviously John Candy and Cool Runnings and things like that. When it comes to preparing for things like this, are the coaches that overbearing at times, but that harsh when needed and such?
Absolutely.
Okay.
So, I had an incredible coach. And I've had my coach, who is Mike Walden, out of Detroit, Michigan, and he was like family to us. He became part of our family, and he was extremely old school, and you know, he would yell at you, but you knew he loved you. You know, it was great. But then you know, there were other coaches and other situations that were, it was all in who you knew. And sometimes the selections of the games were coaches' selection. It wasn't necessarily the fastest people. It wasn't necessarily the most skilled people. It was, who you know. And it was very frustrating. But things have changed. So my father got involved in cycling when I did. He was very supportive of my racing career, and they supported me a lot, and I was gone a lot, but he started coming down to the bike camps with me and started helping with like the videography. He would like drive the motorcycles and ride next to us and get video film footage of us so that the coaches could analyze everybody's, racing and stuff. And he helped build probably 4 to 6 velodromes. So if you've ever watched the Olympics, when you see the track cycling, it's a big oval that's banked really steep. He's helped build between 4 and 6 of those around the world with my coach's son-in-law.
Wow.
So not only in cycling, but I'm involved with speed skating. So my coach told me that I needed to be a year-round athlete, and he got me involved with speed skating. Well, I had actually figure skated growing up and just loved it just because. But then when I got into speed skating, it was just, it was like flying to me. Speed skating was like flying. So I ended up at the Olympic Training Center.
When you see speed skaters, it does look like you guys are gliding on ice, like flying on ice. It looks like that. It's like all in perfect sync.
Oh, I love it. So I love doing it. I love coaching it. To skate is next best thing to flying. But through my coach, he started getting me involved as I was racing. He taught me how to coach. And evidently I'm kind of a natural coach, and I absolutely love coaching. And so I've been an athlete in speed skating, an athlete in cycling at the Olympic Training Center, and I've been a coach as well.
That's great.
That's a rare talent.
It is.
It is.
You know, I mean,
it's kind of like, wow, I got this really cool cousin. I'm so glad. I was teasing with you last night. I said, my gosh, Cindy, I'm surprised my mom never said, why can't you be more like your cousin?
Well, probably because she didn't want you to go out and get hit by a car.
That might have something. Yeah. Don't want to do that. Don't want to feel the pain, because I have a very low threshold for pain. I scream when somebody sticks a needle in me. I'm like, ah!
Okay.
I should know. I'm usually the one that gets the phone call before the doctor's appointment.
Well, that's one of the things that I've told my athletes is at the Olympic Games, the difference between a gold medal and fourth place is the gold medalist is able to put up with the pain longer. That's the difference.
Yep.
You said in a speech, and in fact, I had to write it down because I didn't want to forget it. In fact, I got my little sticky note.
Okay.
You put in your speech,
pain is temporary.
Yes. Go ahead. You say it, you'll be better at it.
Pain is temporary. Pride is forever.
I love that.
That is true.
That is very true.
I can relate to you, Cindy, because I coached my kids when they were in different sports, because I played baseball and football, you know, that kind of thing when I was younger. And so I could also relate to your cancer experience. I had non-Hodgkin's lymphoma in 2007.
Uh-huh.
And I believe your outlook helps determine how you do and stuff like that.
Absolutely.
I stayed positive and told my kids, I'm going to beat it. Don't worry. You know, we caught it stage two. They removed the stage two lymph node growth that was the size of an orange in my thigh and my right thigh. And I told my girl, look, I'm going to beat it. You know, I stayed positive. People thought I was crazy. You know, no, I'm going to beat this. This is going to be, it's a minor bump in the road. And you looked at it as an opponent. I told them, I'm looking at it as an opponent. It's a big, tough opponent, you know, and that's how you look at it. I'm going to face it down and beat it. I mean, you know, that's just how you fight something like that. And I want to know if that's kind
attitude
of how you,
is everything.
Yours. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're not positive in a lot of things, and I go saying that I applied my sports mentality to that. You go into any contest thinking you're going to win. You never go in with doubt. You go in, I'm going to win. I'm going to beat this. I'm going to, you know, we're going to defeat this, you know. Whether it's, you know,
well,
so I
things,
just wondered.
So we
know,
do a lot of visualization. So, so the sport, like bike racing, it's 90% mental. I mean, it really is. It's 90% mental, and being able to shut out pain and distraction and focus on what the task is and what you need to do, and you need to shut out any self-doubt, any lingering self-doubt, because that's going to weaken you and that's going to distract you. And the same thing comes to when you're fighting pretty much anything in life.
Yeah.
And so So in 2004, I was an international, you know, I was internationally ranked, you know, cyclist and speed skater, and I was a coach. And I was, you know, one of the healthiest people I knew. And, you know, I was diagnosed with breast cancer. And I was just absolutely flabbergasted. I was flabbergasted that this could happen. And so I was, so anytime, you know, we as humans, you know, it's like a loss when you go through something like that. And Dr. Kubler-Ross has something called the five stages of grieving. And
oh yeah.
And it's
yep.
Anger, denial, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. And yep. You kind of go through a lot of these, and then not necessarily in that order. And you can stay a long time in one of these stages, uh-huh. Or you can, you know, mix them up. But anger, boy, I stayed in anger a long time.
I bet.
But
I bet.
You know, I
have to admit that I kind of, my first thought was, okay, you know, I went in and had an ultrasound on my thigh, and I worked at William Beaumont Hospital here in Michigan at the time in video production. And so I sat in on grand rounds and stuff. So I learned a little bit medically, and I thought, okay, that's not a normal cyst, you know, when they were talking mm-hmm. about it. And so my first thing was, okay, God, just let me be brave. I'm an example to my kids, because two had already graduated and one was about to. So I was like, even though they're practically adult, all of them are adults, but they're young adults, I still got to serve as an example. This is how you fight something. This is, you know, this is life. And this is how you face adversity.
Exactly.
So it was like right away, I was like, God, just let me be brave. You know, let me be brave.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, you know, just my personal on this. So not long before I was diagnosed, before I even, so I found my own tumor, you know, you know, it wasn't a mammogram. I was still pretty young. And, so it was before I was supposed to get a mammogram. And, basically at one point I had said, Lord, I give myself to you completely, you know, use me as your instrument. Well, then,
oh, wow.
You know, after I was diagnosed, I was just so angry. I was so angry. And, you know, I was just like, this is just ridiculous. You know, I couldn't even talk to God at that point. I was like, I'm just angry. And then, you know, after I had, so I went through chemo. And so, but I was just so determined that I was not going to let cancer my identity away. And my identity was I was a coach and I was an athlete. So 2 days after my second chemotherapy infusion, I won the state championships. 3 days after my third chemotherapy, I captained a women's team time trial team to a gold medal. And then 18 days after my last chemotherapy, I was bald as a cue ball, hiding it under my helmet. Nobody knew except, you know, my team knew what I was going through, and I won the national championships in Kenosha, Wisconsin.
Wow.
So I was like very, very – so I used my anger, and I used, you know, it and the visualization. And so I visualized, you know – that I had muscle memory and that I could still do this even though I was fighting cancer at the time. But after I had surgery, I woke up one day and I remembered having said that prayer. And I thought, I have a purpose. You can't just write God a blank check and not expect him to cash it. So the next time I'm going to go, okay, no. You know, I had written a blank check, and that's when I basically said, you know, if I could reach out and help just one person, it would make my journey through cancer worth it.
Wow.
And so that's pretty much the spark that started Spokes of Hope. And so,
yes, I love that.
So basically there is magic that happens when cancer survivors get together. It's like magic, because it's kind of like war buddies, because we've all been through, you know, the same. You know, we know that we know the fear, we know the anger, we know everything that flashes through your mind. You know the taste of the chemo. You know what they've gone through. And so when we get together, it's a celebration of like,
hey,
it's like you're like an immediate best friends, because we're like family members, because we are war buddies. We've been through the same stuff.
You know, I was going to say, it's like when a Marine meets another Marine on the street. It, you know, you're brothers for life.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. And I prefer term. I didn't like the term cancer survivors. That seemed to me, that seemed like a victim. I preferred cancer battler. Absolutely. You know, that.
How about warrior?
I'm nobody's victim. I'm a warrior, a battler. Yeah. Warrior.
Hey, my mom called back in, so I don't think she's done with you yet, Cindy.
Okay.
I know that she's on a time limit, and we'll pick up on this in just a second. I know she's on a time limit. Hey, Mom, she's probably got the girls. Hey, Mom.
I just called to listen.
Oh, okay. I'll put you on mute.
Okay.
Well, no, I don't have to put you on mute. You can talk if you want to.
I can. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
On
the listen.
Yeah, this has been great.
Open invitation.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So Cindy, and then it turned out you had it a second time.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So So in 2008, almost exactly to the day that I was diagnosed, I went in for my 4-year exam, and my doctor was like feeling up under my arms, and basically it had spread to the lymph nodes. So then it was like same stuff, different day.
Wow.
I was like, okay, you know the drill.
Wow. That and you didn't give up. That's what's really cool. Like most people, they're just like, you know what, I'm done. You know, life is stabbing me. I'm bleeding out now. You didn't. You got back up.
No, because I have too much to live for and too much yet to do to reach out to people. I'm not ready to give that up yet. So, you know, I still have business to do. And, you know, the things that were playing out were folding out in front of me. So actually in 2004, so I was diagnosed in 2004. In 2005, I was named head coach for Team USA for Special Olympics to go to Japan. So,
wow.
We were going to Nagano. That's like, okay. And so that just was a whole new world of things that, you know, this was just a bump in the road and, you know, just more experience to put under my belt to perhaps I can pay it forward to somebody in the future.
Wow.
Well, just in this time alone, you definitely know how to inspire people. So, I mean, outside of coaching, have you ever done any motivational speaking at all?
Yeah, you should.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Very inspirational and motivational.
I've done some on invitational motivational speaking. I'm not a very good promoter.
Oh, okay.
I can talk. But thank you.
No problem.
Yeah, in fact, one thing, talking about the Olympics, Randy Hurt, speed skating. You inspired him. I love your speech with him. You could tell he was so comfortable with you, and I love the fact that you turned around and you jingled the little gold medals on his neck, and he just had to gave that
all three
smirk.
Of them. Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. And you found him, and you told him to be a speed skater.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, he was, like, skating around on hockey skates. And basically, so one of the things is I do a lot of inclusion. So when I coach, you know, I include my regular athletes with my special athletes. And so teaching people with intellectual, the way I see it, it's all of, if you follow Special Olympics and people with intellectual disabilities, you understand there's a big problem with the R word.
Yeah.
And you may have heard
of
about
course.
The R word. So I would like to change the R word to respect, which we should push that particular R word. And any human being, and that's all we really need to do for any human being, human to human, is share respect.
Well, Cindy, if you don't mind, can I add an alternate solution for the R word as well?
Certainly.
How about resilience?
Oh, that one's good too.
Yeah.
So, you know, because I mean, you know, even though respect is great and everything else, you know, it, at the end of the day, it's always you know, it's the mental aspect that will help you know, push you to the next level.
Right.
So that's an idea.
One of the, absolutely. I like it.
Thank you.
And resilience is right up there with determined.
All about determination. In the long run, that's what it's about.
Yes.
But when I found so many people were being coached just to the level that the coach, you know, so people with intellectual disabilities so many times are coddled and placated and, you know, it's like, oh, you poor little thing, or they treat them like children. And it's like, no, these aren't children. These are adults. They're adults with intellectual disabilities. We need to treat them like adults, not like children, and give them the respect of an athlete. And it was amazing when I would just, you know, I didn't say, let's see what you can do. I mean, it's like, you know, this is what you can do. I didn't do that. I said, okay, let's take it up a notch. And, you know, would continue to challenge them. And, you know, that was embraced, and they responded to it wonderfully. And that's how, you know, when we went to Japan, 27 of my 28 athletes brought home medals.
Wow, that's impressive.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was an incredible experience.
I bet it was. And in fact, my mom, one of her first jobs when we moved to South Carolina is she worked at Midland Center where, you know, they house the mentally challenged. And I got to know a lot of them, and I got to see them at a very early age. And honestly, I love them to death. They have the sweetest, it's a childlike innocence is the best way that I can explain it, is they have a childlike innocence and honesty about them.
Absolutely. They don't judge you like other people do.
No, they don't.
Exactly. And I don't know if you ever seen the movie Dead Ringer. Dead Ringer? The Ringer.
No,
The Ringer.
The Ringer. Right. So actually, I got to meet Timothy Shriver. So I got to meet Timothy Shriver and his mother, who founded the Special Olympics. And when I went into his office, basically they had the ringer up there. And I thought, you know, when I saw the ringer initially advertised, I went, oh, my goodness, this is going to be terrible. This is going to be awful. It was wonderful. And, you know, it's not an exact And,
the actors that was going to be, in the movie, The Ringer, they had a meeting with them, and they said, okay, Johnny Knoxville is going to be the lead. And they all applauded. They all applauded, and they're like, oh, you guys aren't offended? They said, no, because he's cool. And they're going to make he's going to make us look cool, so people won't pick on us at the playground anymore. I thought, oh, my gosh. I cried because that was like a behind the scenes of The Ringer on the DVD where they were talking about that. But, they loved the fact that Johnny Knoxville was going to be The Ringer.
Yeah.
And they were – the producers and everybody was so afraid that they would be upset that – Johnny Knoxville, but he did a really good job. I think he did a really good job, and I think he took special care of that character. I think, in my opinion.
Well, you have to admit, I think it's just one of those things where, when it comes to Johnny Knoxville, he's always famous for going outside the box to begin with. I mean, that's why Jackass made its popularity. So, that doesn't surprise me to see him attempting something along this line. And it's just even cooler to know that, that the community can actually rally behind him like that. So, that definitely gives additional props.
Go ahead, Cindy.
Oh, hopefully it enlightened people to understand, what Special Olympics was more about. They got rid of some of the stereotypes because, he was the character was trying to exemplify the stereotypes, and they were tearing down, the show ended up tearing down a lot of the stereotypes and showed the humanity and the brightness and the joy of life people have, if given the opportunity.
And
that's the thing is we just have
to... I loved it when he went back to his uncle. He goes, they're really good athletes. I can't beat them.
Oh,
these are not typical athletes. When I think of, when I first seen the advertisement, I was like, oh, no. But when I seen the movie, I cried. I'm like, what the hell? It's a comedy. Why am I crying? And it's because, it was a heartfelt movie. If nobody's seen it, go see it.
Well, you definitely got to give props to the writers for that part because that means that they did something right and somebody did their homework.
That's true.
Yeah. It was backed and endorsed. It was endorsed by Special Olympics, so I'm sure that they made sure. I mean, in order to use their name and the brand and everything, they had some say into making sure that it was done well.
Yeah, non-offensive, which is something that I really liked, is the fact that it was so unoffensive. Oh, by the way, I'm going to turn William and Tom in. They're messaging me on Facebook right now. What Tom is. Tom says, you are most definitely awesome, and you're very inspiring, and he wants you to come back.
Yeah, well, William was just kind of enjoying the company and just enjoying the conversation.
Yeah. Oh, well,
thank you. We've been through shared experiences, so yeah, you're like a sister in arms when it comes to cancer and coaching, and on top of that, you're inspirational. So I'll be honest about
thank
it.
You.
And in my case. I wasn't in Special Olympics, but I did have to go to the special ed program for most of my high school. So, I know that battle very well.
Well,
and,
you know, it's all about attitude. It's not only the attitude that we have on, it's dealing with the attitude of others.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's the whole thing about, and that's, so one of the things that I try to tell people, so when I do get an opportunity to speak, and when I get to speak to people who have not been affected by cancer in their lifetime, one of the things I try to do is coach them on how to deal with it when it does come into their lives. And so I tell them, you know, we don't want pity. We want our lives back. And so when you hear that a friend, when you have a friend or a family member and you hear that they have cancer, the worst thing you can do is go, oh, I'm so sorry. Because when you say that to me, it's like you just closed the lid on my casket, didn't you? You just give me up for dead.
Yeah.
So what I tell people is you need to say, wow, that sucks. What are we going to do about it? Because it gets right off the bat, it acknowledges that it's in the room and it truly sucks. The next thing is, what are we going to do about it? So one, that's going forward. It's not giving up. What is the plan of attack? And what are we going to do about it? Meaning you are not alone.
Wow.
Unfortunately, I think some of that, a lot of that's generational, because a lot of people grew up in an era, and I'm old enough to remember when non-Hodgkin's lymphoma was one of the deadlier cancers. Thank God for advancements in technology and everything. So, you know, some people, I'd say a little bit older than me, because I'm 61, know that, you know, it's like basically a death sentence. You know, like you said, attitude and all that's everything. So it just kind of, I think it's some of their, you know, their experience. It doesn't have to be ours, though.
So. Now, Cindy, go ahead. Ladies first.
No, go ahead. One of the things I had, so I was very open about my cancer diagnosis because, you know, for me, it's like a thief. You can't just let a thief come and steal something from you and not point it out and say, hey, I'm not going to let this thief in. And, you know, you have to recognize it and understand it, because if that thief comes to your neighborhood, you want to know what that thief looks like.
Yep.
I had another coach come up to me at one point and said, she pulled me aside and she goes, we have something in common. And I said, oh, yeah, we have kids out there. And they're like, no, I've been diagnosed with breast cancer. I'm like, oh, where are you being treated? And she went, somebody might hear you. And I was like, oh, my goodness. She doesn't want anybody to know.
Wow.
I'm sorry?
Boy, that's
she was afraid to even admit it and that somebody might hear her, that she had cancer.
Wow.
I'm like, you know what? It's not – oh. So this was something.
That's bad.
So my daughter was 9 years old. When I was diagnosed. And, you know, I had to figure out how to tell her that I had cancer.
Oh, my gosh.
And time do we have left?
We're going to be 10 minutes live, but we do get about a 20-minute after party. So we have about 30 minutes left.
Okay.
So we won't be live, but people that's going to listen to it maybe tomorrow, they'll hear all this.
Okay. Well, basically, I tried to explain to her on a child's level, you know, what cancer is, and basically from the cell level and everything. And I explained it to her, and, you know, I said, you know, we have cells in our body that all have a job. And sometimes we have some cells in our body that decide that they're going to go off. They don't want to do their job anymore. They want to go and they want to pull other cells with them, and they make trouble in the body. And I have some cells in my body that have done that. And when this happens, oftentimes it's called cancer. So I have cancer and I'm going to have to take some medicine to kill these cells that are making trouble in my body. And I might lose my hair. I might be sick at my stomach. And I said, and so this is going on. Do you have any questions? And she looked at me, and she looked at my mom, and she looked at my husband, and she goes, yeah. Can I go outside and jump on the trampoline now? And we just,
sighed with this.
Well, then she went outside and jumped, and then later on I realized she had to process everything that I had just told her. So then she came back in. She came back in and she said, Mom, can I catch cancer from you? And I said, no. Cancer's not contagious. She goes, well, there's this little girl who's on my bus and she doesn't have any hair and nobody will sit with her and nobody will play with her. And I said, Madison, you go and sit next to her and you tell her that your mom has cancer and see what happens. So the next day she went to school. She came running home and she goes, Mom, you were right. She's got brain cancer. And she and this little girl became best friends. And so when we started Spokes of Hope, we have a slogan, and the slogan is, cancer's not contagious, but hope can be. Spread the hope. So that's our logo, or our catchphrase.
You were talking about that and how you described cancer to your daughter. Have you ever thought about maybe writing a children's book about that? Honestly, because that would be like, because there's a lot of kids out there where their parents do have cancer. The way you explained it, I think that would be an amazing children's book to explain.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, you know, speaking of books, you know, I'd love to hear more about Determined. You know, where can I get an autographed copy? Because I'd like to put it on my Christmas list.
Well, you would contact me. So actually, go through spokesofhope.org, and we've got a so it's spokesofhope.org, and there's a link to books by authors with who've had cancer, and my book is one of those.
Oh, wow.
Cool. Sounds like a plan.
And so, yep, and basically I'll get you an autographed copy.
Sweet. So, I'm putting it on my Christmas list as we speak, because I'll admit I'm such a bibliophile. I have an arrangement with my wife. I'm not to buy any books the month of December, and it's hard. It's the withdrawal that always kills me.
Well, what would you say your toughest, just to give you an example, my toughest thing when I had the cancer was from the drug. I was weak and tired. I did not have any strength whatsoever. In fact, I had to stop working out because the muscle contraction, I got a blood clot. The worst thing I got was a blood clot. One half of my side of my face looked like King Kong Bundy, the wrestler. The other half of me looked like normal. But other than that, I was weak and tired. What was the worst aspect for you during yours?
I had a double mastectomy.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, probably the surgery. The chemotherapy wore me down, with my blood count getting really low.
Surgery.
I'm sorry?
I should have specified after the surgery. I'm sorry. Because that would be the major part.
The pain after surgery.
Yeah.
Would probably be the hardest part, because it was hard to move my arms. But probably a couple of weeks after my surgery, my husband set up my bike on a trainer so I could get up and ride no-handed, on my bike so I could, you know, stay in shape. But it took 6 weeks before I could get on the bike again. And I got on the back of a tandem and rode, it's called the Hilly 100, with a friend, and it was that was kind of like my reintroduction to getting back on the bike.
Well,
so it was just once again, it was like very liberating to be back on the bike, back in the saddle again.
Wow, man, you're like
that's good.
That's the way to do it. I mean, you got to decide what's going to hold you back and what is setting you back. And the answer is nothing. It's all mental.
Yeah. 90%.
Yeah. When I used to hang out with my brothers and they acted stupid, I would always say, that's my blood. I can look at you proudly and say, that's my blood, because we got the same blood running through our bodies, I think.
Yep.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, good. Yeah.
Well,
yeah, I got to tell you, this is the most talkative that Tom's really – I'm really impressed with what you did. You can tell when Tom is a fan. Tom's already a fan.
On top of that, he's actually opened up more instead of talking to the dog and putting the dog out.
She's sleeping right now, plus he's being good. She always has to walk at the time of night.
Tom, honestly, I did not know that you suffered from cancer. You never told me that.
Well,
so,
it was 2007, so it was kind of a while back, but it was just, it was funny because I actually finished my book, Shadows in the Dark, during that time, because I was off work 7 months, and I read like 12 books and finished writing my own novel, so I had a lot of downtime. I mean, I couldn't work out, really, because, like I said, my muscles constricted and it developed blood clots, which I had to be rushed. I had a cough that I developed, and I had to go in. And
so you had pulmonary embolism.
And I had in my jugular. So, it just kind of was in my jugular. And I was already there. I came back from the bathroom. I go, this don't look normal to the nurse. They had blood thinners in me within 10 minutes. They misdiagnosed me on my infection I had. And, I told my wife, I go, it's a good thing we did misdiagnose it because I was already at the hospital. They could give me the blood thinners within a few minutes after seeing it. One half of me, like I said, looked like King Kong Bundy, and the other half looked normal.
Wow.
I had to warn everybody, before you come to see me, I don't look right.
Cindy, you brought little Tom out.
Yeah, more than normal. So that's great.
I definitely agree with Tom. I don't want you to be cut off on mid-sentence. We are going to be cut off really soon here. Tell everybody where they can find you. And yes, if we did not scare you away, we would love to rebook you.
So, spokes of
hope. About cancer, Sheena's scared of us.
Oh, go ahead, Cindy.
I'm sorry.
What did you say, Tom?
I said she battled cancer. She ain't afraid of us.
That's true, Tom. We didn't scare you away.
Oh, no.
Okay, Cindy, tell us where everybody can find you, because I know the show's going to get a lot of listeners. By the way, we are in the top 5 of the live listeners, and there's like 273 pages and 12 shows listed on each page. We are in the top 5, so we've already got a lot of listeners.
Congratulations.
No, because it's you. It's you. People are tuning in and listening to you.
I'm just
a troublemaker. So where would they find you?
Spokesofhope.org.
And you do have a Facebook page.
I do.
And she runs it herself. So if you message Cindy, you're going to talk to her, not an administrator. That is Cindy C-I-N-D-I-H-A-R-T. But, yes, please go for Spokes for Hopes.
Spokes of Hope.
Spokes of Hope. Sorry. Yeah.
Well, I'm already one step ahead of you and already sent a message.
I will do it soon, too.
All right. Well, it's very nice to meet you.
You
definitely
likewise.
Have two fans. And by the way, the Hippopotamus for Christmas, did you like that song?
It reminds me of my sister-in-law. She's crazy for hippos.
Oh. I've always loved that song, and I was like, okay, we're going into the Christmas season. I want to start playing, you know, Christmas music as a starting music, and I'm like, okay, Cindy's going to be a guest. Oh my gosh, I want to have a party for Christmas because, you know, I think it's a great song, and I thought it would fit you for the show because, you know, it's kind of like the innocence. Not, you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
Well. Brancy, I'll tell you this
much. I eat like a hippopotamus for Christmas.
I'll tell you this much, Brancy. You're going to make my Cindy happy in the morning when she listens to the rebroadcast because that's her favorite Christmas song.
It's one of my favorites, too. In fact, for church, I wanted Michaela. She was so cute. That's my niece, the one that my mom's picking up, and now she's like 21, I think. But when I first heard it, my niece was like 8. And I was like, oh, my gosh, I would love to do, like, this little Christmas show and have Michaela lip-syncing it and my brother dressed up like a hippo and, you know, her prancing around. I kind of thought of you with that also. So that's why I chose that. At least I didn't do Merry Christmas from the family, you know.
Okay, no problem.
There you go.
Yeah.
We'll play that one next week when we got our next
Oh, not the dogs barking jingle bells?
Oh, my gosh, I totally forgot those ones. Oh, we need to do the dogs barking jingle bells, too.
Yeah.
And maybe some Bob Rivers, because... you know, come on. Some of us have a twisted sense of humor.
The first day of Christmas is such a pain to me. Finding a Christmas tree. Oh, I am singing, Cindy. You said, or am I going to sing tonight? The second
Too
thing
late.
Of
yeah.
Christmas is such
a pain to me. And now it's song stuck
right.
in your head, see?
Yeah.
Second thing of Christmas is such a pain to me. I forgot what
I used to sing,
one.
I'm beginning
oh,
to drink a lot
I got,
of Christmas.
I got it. Yeah. And wearing your clothes, your tight underwear, walking around in women's underwear.
Yep.
Yep.
Later
officer,
on, if you
want to,
look at dress like Madonna.
Yeah.
Have you heard those ones, Cindy?
I can't say that I have.
Look up Bob Rivers' Twisted Christmas.
It's great. It is so great how they just totally warped Christmas for everybody. The 12 Things of Christmas is. Oh, and then there's also Bob Rivers'
Halloween.
There's something stuck up in the chimney, and I don't know what it is, but it's been there all night long. I love that song.
Or my personal favorite, didn't I get this last year? Try to act surprised, Uncle Bob.
Yeah,
that's just our normal reading.
Cindy, you got to check it out. They're hilarious, but they're tastefully done funny. Later on,
funny.
If you want to. Oh, wait, there's a guy, in the office, there's a guy named Melvin. He pretends that I am Murphy Brown. He'll say, are you ready? We'll say, whoa, man.
Wait until the wife is out of town.
Later on, if you wanna, we can dress Like, Don, how did the hippopotamus for Christmas get into walking around in women's underwear?
Well, how about the comedian singing the 12 drinks at Christmas? You know, and she's tired by the time she gets, you know, four little rooters, you know.
I never heard the 12 drinks for Christmas.
No,
yeah, we're a little twisted here, Cindy. This is, you know, this is the after
party. Lots of us rebelling against Christmas music the day after Halloween. Shouldn't be played until after Thanksgiving.
There we go.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's almost like the famous one, which is the Canadian Christmas, where it's on the first day of Christmas, my true love gave to me a beer.
Oh, I have heard that one.
Yeah.
Cindy, what is your favorite Christmas song? Please don't say Mariah Carey. All I want for Christmas is
I don't know. I don't know that I have a favorite Christmas song.
My for a serious Christmas song, I would have to say Frank Sinatra's "I'll Be Home for Christmas."
Yeah, that's a good one.
Good
that
toy.
Is a good one. I know, because I'm related to Cindy. I got good taste.
I like chestnuts.
There you go.
Chestnuts roasting on open fire. That's a good one.
Oh, my gosh.
Yep.
Christmas song.
Nat King Cole he's the man.
I've always been partial towards Nina Simone with the Little Drummer Boy.
That me and my younger brother, Scotty, man, we loved the Little Drummer Boy cartoon. Like, we had to watch it all the time. That was the one cartoon that me and my younger brother would always watch was the Little Drummer Boy. Come, they told me, pa-rum-pa-pum-pum.
I mean, yeah. It's a shame they don't play it too much these days anymore because, Rankin Bass always did a great job on the animation, even with the claymation like that and such.
Yeah, Nick loves – Nick, are you still there?
Nick-a-doodle.
Nick, say – let me go find him. Because he has not said hi to you. He's been quiet the whole time. Do you want to meet my fiance, Cindy?
I could, but I'm actually going to have to go because we've been driving all day and it's after midnight here.
Okay, we'll let you go. Yeah, most
okay.
definitely.
All right.
All right.
Well,
Stephanie,
welcome to
Florida
again, Cindy.
Yep. You are.
I'm sorry?
Great having you here.
Oh, thank you.
We would
it was
like
very
to,
nice to meet you.
You too.
We would like to book you. We'll talk about that if you want to come back. You don't have to say yay or nay over the air.
Okay.
But we would like to book you.
All right.
All right. Good night.
All right,
and,
thank you so much. All
right. And you're going to Disney. You're going to Disney World, right?
I am. Reliving
yeah,
my childhood.
There you go.
We picked the
right
night to go.
All right. Yeah.
Thanks, Cindy.
Should have seen the traffic. All right. Thank you so much. Alrighty.
All right.
Bye-bye.
All right.
Bye.
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 She's awesome.
Heavenly.
I told you guys would love her.
Well, she's not kidding on the traffic. So, I mean, you know. Well, once again, she picked a perfect title for her book being Determination because it takes a lot of patience to sit there to wait to get into the park, especially this time of year. So, hats off to her for that part.
All right, what do we want for Christmas? We want a hippopotamus for Christmas.
I want a hippopotamus for Christmas. Only a hippopotamus will do. Don't want a doll, no dinky tinker toy. I want a hippopotamus to for that's the easy thing to do. I can see me now on Christmas morning creeping down the stairs. Oh, what joy and what surprise when I open up my eyes to see a hippo hero standing there. I want a hippopotamus for Christmas. Only a hippopotamus will do. No crocodile, no rhinoceros. I only like hippopotamuses. And hippopotamuses like me too. Mom says the hippo would eat me up for sin. Teacher says the hippo is a vegetarian.
Good night, everybody. Good night, Tom.